You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacers fans, welcome into the Wednesday edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast. We have a lot to get to today, quotes from practice, all-star stuff, and a Suns preview. I'm Tony East with the West Indianapolis Community News. You can follow me on Twitter at TEastNBA. You can follow this podcast on Twitter at Locked On Pacers. And if you don't mind, if you're listening right now, if you could take 1 or 2 seconds and leave us a nice review and rating on iTunes, I would really appreciate that. It will help us grow. But anyway, there's a lot to get to today. Well, not a lot to get to today, but there's some fun stuff and a variety of stuff to get to today. We've got that Suns preview that I just mentioned. We got to talk about Victor Oladipo making the All-Star team and being in the dunk contest. I had Nekias Duncan from all over the place. He writes at B-Ball Breakdown and writes about the Heat and writes at FanRag. He came on to help me preview or review, the All-Star reserves and how cool it is that Oladipo made it. I talked to Corey Joseph about, you know, his improvements this year. I have some quotes on that. I got some quotes from Turner on his injury, and I got some quotes from Al Jefferson about being a veteran. So a lot to talk about, lots of fun stuff to listen to today. But the thing everybody wants to hear about is Turner's injury. If you saw my tweets from yesterday, I dropped my Twitter earlier, so go check it out if you want to read them. Turner, I got a video of him shooting threes right-handed, and his shot looked really good. I was really, really pessimistic, if you'll recall, that he would even play by like mid-March. So the fact that he was doing that looked really encouraging. And when he came over for media availability, he seemed very, very much less injured than I anticipated. And he seemed to think that he may be able to play tonight, if not maybe soon in the next game. But just listen to what he had to say today at practice. So you're shooting right-handed today. Are you feeling a little better in the elbow?
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty good. You know, I've made some good progression over the past week or so.
That's good. Do you anticipate returning to the court anytime soon? What's kind of the thinking behind all that?
I don't know. Just depends on how it feels. Depends on how I can help my team. So I'm not sure yet.
How often are you wearing that brace? Is that something you'll put on when you go home?
Yeah, I just kind of just keep it stabilized and whatnot. I mean, it's healing pretty well. So that's all I can ask for.
Is there a chance you would play tomorrow, or is that
I don't know. I think they list me as questionable, but hopefully I'll be able to give it a go. If not, just gotta wait.
So I take two things from that interview. One is that he is healing so much faster than, like I already said, than I originally anticipated, and I mean, at the latest, he's back by the end of the week against the Magic. You know, maybe he's out for this game and maybe that Cavs game on Friday, but it sounds like he'll be back so much sooner than I thought, which is just awesome. And second, as for this game tomorrow, if you're here for Daily Fantasy or just any reason at all, and we'll touch on Daily Fantasy later, but if you're here for that kind of stuff, his status for tomorrow, you know, his pause after someone asked him if he'd play in that Suns game made me think, you know, probably no, if I had to really guess. And then McMillan said later, I have this quote, but I can't find it for some reason in my sound files, that, you know, even if Turner does play, he'll probably have him on a bench roll with Sabonis as the starter just to ease him back in. So don't expect huge production from him in that Suns game if he is able to go. They easily handled the Suns by 23 points without him just a week or so ago. So I don't expect them to rush him into that game, or, you know, maybe they just hold him out just because they think they can win without him. So that's just where he's at for now, but it's encouraging to see that I would guess he'll be back by the end of the week. As for Glenn Robinson, another Nate quote that I can't find, but I saw Glenn there, and Nate said he did his first full live practice of the season, but they're going to ease him in slowly. He's still not particularly close to returning. Someone asked if he'd be back by the All-Star break, and Nate said maybe. So I think they're eyeing maybe the after the All-Star break bringing him back, but they really, really, really do not want him to re-aggravate that injury. So they're being extremely cautious because of how bad it was. But it was nice to see that he went through his first full live practice today. He was in the second team uniform. So, you know, he got in the scrimmages and all that. He was shooting free throws after with I can't remember who. But yeah, it was good for that. Something else to monitor: TJ Leaf was not at practice, and the Pacers reported he has an ankle injury. He's questionable for tonight's game. No one really noticed, including myself. I mean, I could tell someone was missing. Like, I counted the players, and, you know, Ben Moore was there. He's a two-way player. So I was like, oh, 15 guys. Okay, Sumner's not here. Fine. But I didn't even realize that TJ Leaf wasn't there until I saw the injury report. So just keep monitoring TJ Leaf's ankle. That's going to be a storyline for the time being going forward. Something else I did is, with the request of Dylan Hughes, one of my friends at 8.9 Seconds, he wanted me to ask Corey Joseph about his improved three-point shooting, and Corey was a really fun interview. He told me quite a bit, and we talked for an extended amount of time about his improvement and how hard he's been working and, you know, being a veteran and some quick plays with Al Jefferson. So I'll have some sound bites from both Corey and Al, but here's Corey about some of his improvements and being a little, not necessarily a veteran. He'll touch on that for you here, but, you know, just being an older guy and being more experienced.
It kind of bleeds into my next question. Does that chemistry and being in Indiana, you know, you're shooting a significant career high from three, is all that bleeding into the same thing, or is it something the team's doing on offense that's letting you score so well from deep?
That, and I worked my ass off.
I saw you right there. Yeah.
I've been working so hard on it since, you know, for years now. Even when I was in Toronto, I was working hard on it. But and it's just a, you know, mentality change this year. You know, I put so much hours in this summer that just passed that I came into this year, and I was thinking whenever I feel like I'm open, I'm just going to let it fly.
Yeah, your catch and shoot numbers are great.
Yeah.
And it's got to be nice that you're good at playing alongside point guards and two guards, that you can get those catch and shoot situations more often.
Yeah, I try to take what the defense gives me, and also whatever coach wants me to do, I try to get out there and, you know, utilize it to my best ability.
That's good. I got one more. I talked to Al about it. Against Utah and in the Lakers game, I saw it. He does that. He's more of a back-to-the-basket kind of guy. And against Utah, I remember the play more vividly where you threw it to him in the post and immediately cut, and it was a read handoff play in the post. Is that something you guys have been working on, or you just knew right away that when he was getting doubled, you should get down there?
It was a read. I mean, he's a vet.
Right.
I have some experience now, too.
Yeah.
I
wouldn't call, you can call yourself a vet.
No, because I'm still young. I don't like that word. I'm still young, so.
27.
Yeah, I'm still, you know,
there.
Yeah, I'm still young. You know. I'm 26. Don't give me years now. Don't give
end
me
of, end of the season. Sorry.
Don't give me years. But, yeah, man, so, yeah, it's just a read. You know, he's a, you know, he's a smart player. I played with, you know, smart bigs a lot, you know, a lot of our bigs here, you know, a good IQ, don't mind him, and so. Just a read.
Worked out really well.
Exactly. I used to coming off, you know, playing with Spurs and stuff, taking all those guys. So
all the ball movement.
You always got to, whenever you make a cut, you always got to be alert.
Mm-hmm. Right, and that replay was my play I broke down this week for my own stuff. So.
Okay.
All right. So I appreciate you talking about it. That was my favorite play of the week.
Okay. Yeah.
I
want to
see it soon.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, you got the staff for it. All right. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
So as you can hear in there, you know, Corey's really having fun and he's blending with his teammates and. It wasn't in that particular soundbite, but I asked him what it's like to play against the team that drafted him in San Antonio, and, you know, he said it makes him play a little harder, and, you know, he had a lot of nice plays in that game, so it's cool to see Corey really gelling with the rest of his teammates and, you know, being good at those veteran kind of plays, especially with Al Jefferson, who's a veteran guy, who I also got to talk to, and he really talked about his veteran presence and how, you know, something I wanted to ask Al about is how the game is evolving around him, how his play style is getting sort of outdated, and he knows it, and he's really candid about talking about, you know, his limitations and what it actually allows him to do that other players can't. So just take a listen to what he had to say, and then we'll talk about the All-Star stuff.
You're a more mid-2000s play style. The Pacers and you specifically have been good at leveraging that recently into plays. I saw against the Jazz you had that play where you did a handoff to Corey down in the post. Is that something you guys recently implemented as a result of the injury, or have you been looking to do that all year?
What are you talking about, just to give him the handoff?
Yeah.
Well, that's
keeping
something.
The post, yeah.
Well, you know, that's something that me and Kemba Walker used to do a lot in Charlotte, and that's something that him and Tim Duncan used to do.
Yeah, it is.
So
yeah.
It was kind of like.
You could ask him about it, too.
Right,
so.
We never talked about it.
Yeah.
It just
knew.
A read.
Yeah, as soon as you saw the cut, it was open, too.
Yeah, you know, that's a read. You know, I always believe, you know, especially in the years of me getting double teamed.
Yeah.
You know, I'm catching the ball and a guard, I see a guard beat, have his man beat. That's just a handoff, a layup every time, or I set up another.
Has it been weird for you to adjust to that with your play style kind of fading out, or have you, you know, with plays like that, I see you're adapting, but, you know, is it harder in that kind of situation?
I think my play style have faded out, but I think when you got a guy like me on the team, you know, coach, do it, you know, even when I was in Charlotte, my last year in Charlotte, here, coach. Do a great job of, you know, still running the plays for me and getting me involved, because I mean, if I'm in the game, if you don't put me on the block, there's no point of having me in the game. So.
Well, it's still a valuable skill just because it's so unique as
right.
well. Yeah,
and guys don't know how to defend it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, exactly. So, and it's cool to see you teaching it to some of the, you know, Domas and Miles as well, who, you know, are working on getting in there. All right, thank you. I appreciate it.
So I liked that Al said that he knows what's the point of me being in the game if you're not going to give me the ball on the block. You know, he knows his limitations and he knows how to leverage his skills in the post into getting opportunities for others. And him and Corey both really liked that read play and they both smiled really big when I asked them about it. So it's cool to see them, you know, be on the same page, and cool to see Al, you know that his veteran presence and unique skill set are what make him valuable now that he's, you know, coming to a slower time of his career where it's a little harder for him to be so talented and put the ball in the rim like he did on his third team All-NBA years back in Charlotte. But now the moment you've all been waiting for, Victor Oladipo is an All-Star, and that's the big news for the Pacers. It's awesome. It's huge news. Their first All-Star since Paul George, LOL. Paul George did not make an All-Star team. I'll have a breakdown of all the All-Star reserves in a second with Nekias Duncan, but let's just hear what Oladipo had to say about the possibility of being an All-Star at practice today.
Given how hard you've worked over your career, just to be mentioned in this All-Star conversation, how rewarding and how gratifying is that?
Oh, it's a blessing, definitely. Definitely a blessing to be considered to be in the talks. Credit my teammates, because obviously it's a team game, and without them I wouldn't have accomplished a lot of the things that I've accomplished individually, and we wouldn't accomplish anything without each other. So it's a team thing, so I credit them for all my success, and you know, I'm just going to continue to keep working hard so I can continue to keep getting better, because honestly I really feel like I have a lot to improve and a lot to grow.
And so it's very cool to see Oladipo, you know, crediting his teammates and being so humbled about the situation. He'll also be in the dunk contest. That question was asked before he was officially in, so that's why they phrased the question the way they did. But yeah, he'll also be in the dunk contest, so very exciting situation for Oladipo. But let's do a quick little breakdown here of the All-Star reserves in both conferences. All right, so before we get into the All-Star reserves, it's Wednesday. It's Draft Wednesday. It's the best day of the week. You guys get to hear me talk about the greatest fantasy sports site, and I'm going to keep doing it until you use Draft. So if you use it, maybe I'll stop talking about it. But you have to use it, and your chances of winning on Draft are 80% better than other salary cap sites, so I don't know why you haven't used it yet. I talk about it every week for a reason. It's my favorite fantasy site. There's no more getting crushed by the pros, which happened to me a lot on other salary cap fantasy sports sites, and that's what makes Draft so great. It's a snake draft, so the pros can't know what players they're going to get before they start, and they can't use their, you know, Excel sheets to get the best value out of all their lineups. It's, you know, it's a live draft. You can do it anytime you want. You can be done in under 5 minutes, and you can get paid the next day. It's really the best way to play daily fantasy sports. It's more fair. It's more possible to win money, and that is why drafts fill every second. So you, a new player, can get a free entry into a real money draft and try it out when you make your first deposit. But you have to use the promo code LOPACERS. That's L-O Pacers. It lets them know that you came from us, it supports the podcast, and you get free money. So it's the perfect storm, but it gets even better because Draft is so sure that you're going to have fun and love it that they're going to offer Locked On Pacers listeners an exclusive money-back guarantee up to $100 if you use that code L-O Pacers at checkout. So I don't know why you haven't yet, because Draft is literally the most fun daily fantasy sports experience. You should go get on Draft, use that code L-O Pacers at checkout, have a great time. Let them know that you came from us, and now let's talk about the All-Star Reserve. So that's what Oladipo had to say about the prospect of him being an All-Star this year, and wouldn't you know it, he made the team. He was one of the last reserves who got leaked on Twitter, which kind of got scary down the stretch, but he's in. And let's talk about the Eastern Conference reserves a little bit, and to do that with me, I have a guest. I have Nekias Duncan from B-Ball Breakdown, and is it Miami Beat Heat? Is that the other one?
Miami Heat Beat.
Heat Beat and Fan Rag. He's from everywhere. What's up, man? How are you?
Doing pretty well, man. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. I'm overwhelmed by Twitter and all these all-star announcements last hour. But the East reserves are Porzingis, Kyle Lowry, Kevin Love, Bradley Beal, John Wall, Al Horford, and our own Victor Oladipo. What are your thoughts? Do you think those are the guys that it should have been?
I don't think there were any bad picks made. The only thing I really had a gripe with was if I'm not mistaken, John Wall was a wild card, right?
Yes.
I probably would have went Andre Drummond over John Wall. But other than that, I really don't have an issue with him.
Yeah, to me, it was the biggest snub was Drummond, too. And I could make an argument for him over Wall or Kevin Love. So it was shocking to me that Kevin Love was A, a forward, and B, got announced so early. But yeah, Drummond is the big snub, and it was so bizarre to me even watching it go down that Oladipo was A, a wild card, and B, the second wild card, because there was so much talk of him starting. You know, do you feel like he's too far down on the pecking order almost?
I do. I guess my unpopular opinion would be that I think he should have started. I would have had him and DeRozan, But I know how the fan vote was going to go with that. And Kyrie's had a great year in his own right, so it's not necessarily disrespect. But, yeah, I'm not understanding why Oladipo was so far down. But he's been a fringe MVP candidate.
More than a fringe, you know. They're 0 and whatever without him and dominating when he plays, especially with Turner. I think it's up to 23-12 when they both play now. That could be horribly wrong, but that's the last time I heard. So crazy that he got that far. But he's in, and he's also in the dunk contest. Are you pumped about that?
I am. He's probably going to be the best showman there, if nothing else.
Yeah, Aaron Gordon was pretty cool 2 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
It'll be a good one. I'm excited for that. Vic was in it in 2013 or 14. I can't remember. He didn't win, but it was cool that he was in it in his Magic days. So hopefully he can put on a show for that. I'll have a fun piece about Fred Jones and his old dunk contest winning days. Yeah, and out west, the All-Stars had also kind of a low amount of controversy, but we have to talk about it because the man the Pacers traded away, Paul George, did not make it. The reserves are Damian Lillard, Jimmy Butler, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, Karl Anthony Towns, Russell Westbrook, and LaMarcus Aldridge. Any gripe with the West?
No real gripe there. I guess the only person you could really haggle about would be Dame. Maybe you throw Lou Williams in there, or if the game's missed doesn't bother you too much, Chris Paul could have been. But those are some pretty good picks as well. Nothing egregious.
You know, everyone who listens knows that I like Paul George more than most Pacers fans, even after his departure. And I kind of don't like that he didn't make it instead of Klay Thompson, just because I think they play a similar kind of – I know Klay has really, really just become a catch-and-shoot and a great defender guy. But Paul George, you know, is a play initiator when Russell Westbrook doesn't play. He's still scoring over 20 points a game and is a top five defensive player of the year candidate on a team that is dominating over the last month and a half. Well, the last 2 weeks they've been kind of bad. But before that, they were really good. And, you know, given his steals and his defense on the wing, I kind of thought he was going to make it. So I would pick out of every player in the league, I think he's the biggest snub, ironically.
Yeah, I think that's fair. He's been, what, the second or third best perimeter defender in the league? If not better than that?
Yeah, I mean, Robertson on his own team, Kawhi, but he has been worse. Giannis, LeBron, Klay. There's a lot of good ones. But I think he's up there, top three for sure.
Yeah, I can see that. I guess it really would depend on where they would have him. If they list him as a forward, then there isn't really much you could do there. You can't take him over Aldridge, I don't think. I said the Klay thing is interesting, but considering how good Golden State is, and he's pretty much in the midst of a career year as well, I didn't see him getting left off. But the West is just tough. Like, I wish they had three teams somehow.
Well, it's not even West versus East, so I don't even know why they have to do conferences for reserves.
You know, that's a good point. If you're going to scrap the traditional way that they're going to do it, you might as well go all out.
There's already a draft. Why does it matter what conference they're in?
Why do we still have 12? Why not go to
15? That is a valid point, too. Well, I think, I don't know, because it's graded so critically on, like, do they make the Hall of Fame, you know, they kind of have to keep it consistent almost.
Oh, see, that bugs me, too, because we get into these kind of things like, well, Al Horford's in, and he's not fun, but he's been very good this year. But, I mean, that's kind of why that thing, why it matters, because they start counting all-star appearances for, like, Hall of Fame resumes, and they probably shouldn't. But, I don't know. I wish they would pick a path and go down that path, if that makes sense.
I am laughing at all the dribble handoff and layup jokes with Al Horford.
It's going to be fun when he drains that 17-footer. I'm a Horford fan, so, I mean, I get it.
Oh, he deserves to be into me, no doubt. And that is the tough balance, too. You know, this is why Vic is so convincingly into me, because they're trying to make it a fans game but also make it the best players, right? So that's where Horford misses the boat, is the fans game part, because he plays, you know, the coach's way, the good handoff guy, layup guy, defense guy. He doesn't do anything exciting, whereas, like, Oladipo is a lock to me because, A, he's killing everybody, and, B, he's also exciting. So he's – you know, he's that guy that deserves it. But, like, with Horford and Aldridge, and, you know, this could have been the fault for Drummond, who just tweeted that, you know, maybe I should do a backflip after I score every time. You know, the excitement factor's not there for those guys.
I don't understand. Like, Drummond's been fun this year. I mean, I guess you would have to have an appreciation for passing. But you know, he still dunks on people, still grabs every available rebound, and now he's, you know, dishing and dribble handoffs and stuff. He's been fun and he's been effective in his role. I'm not sure why he got punished.
Because apparently rebounding is the least important stat in the NBA.
I guess that's it.
It's not true, but that's probably what happened there. I would have had him in probably over Porzingis and Wall, actually. So it's a bummer for Drummond. You do a lot of Heat writing, so I guess I'll lob this one up to you. I think everyone would say no Heat players deserve to make it, but if one of them had to, who would it have been? I know Dragic is like the driver, but Richardson's been like the best, and Whiteside has the stats. You know, which Heat player you think would have been the closest to deserving this year?
I think the coaches love Dragic, so I would think if they were going to pick a Heat player, it probably would have been him. I don't know, it's hard to judge because Josh Richardson had his strong December, and now Hassan Whiteside is playing like a top five or six center over the last couple of weeks. And, you know, we just never see that level of consistent impact from him. If that's him, then you obviously pick him because he's the most talented player on the roster. But he's been hurt and he's been inconsistent. So I think Dragic would probably be the safe pick there.
Yeah, I'd probably say Dragic too. He might be the most impactful. Maybe Richardson, man. I don't know. I think he's the most talented, that's for sure. But it is a tough choice. And Zach Lowe put it in that weird way too, in that good way in his article today. It's like the Heat are winning just because they have so many B-plus players but no AA All-Star guys.
Yeah, that's really it. And, you know, that's not a snub. I mean, that's just kind of the reality of how they play. It's more of an egalitarian offense. Everyone contributes defensively. You know, everybody moves on the string. So I know it's just a balanced effort, and that's how they're grinding out games right now.
Yeah, I think they're the only team in the East top eight seeds that did not get an All-Star. And I think out West, every top eight team might have. No, the Spurs did. Hang on. I'm trying to do this in my head and talk at the same time. The Clippers did not, so never mind. But the Clippers and Heat, I think, are the only two currently poised for the playoff teams that did not get an All-Star, so that's interesting.
It is interesting. I would imagine, well, you don't want anybody to get hurt, but somebody's probably going to get hurt at some point within the next couple weeks in the West. I think Lou will probably get in.
Oh, I hope so. I think he could be the biggest snub, and he's definitely got like the excitement factor, and it's in LA, and this is the first time ever that no one from the host city has made it. So I feel like he'd be the first guy they pick, right?
Yeah, they have to. He's such a personality.
Yeah. For reasons. You think both of his old girlfriends will show up if he makes it?
They have to. They have all three of them together.
That's how he walks out of the tunnel to be a producer. All right, well, we have to be happy that Oladipo's in, and he's reportedly in the dunk contest too, but I don't really want to touch on that until it's confirmed. I have a Suns preview coming up really quick. Nikias, man, thanks for doing this.
No problem, sir.
All right, everybody, we'll be right back for the Suns preview. All right, so let's preview a little Suns action. So the Suns, as we talked about on our weekly preview pod, are really not very good. Their record this year is 17-30, which doesn't seem awful. You know, they're like 6th or 7th in the lottery, but their expected win-loss, which is B-Ball Ref just does a regression of wins and losses versus your margin of victory, and their expected win-loss is 14-33, which would be the second worst record in the league. They're 4th in pace, but they're 26th in offense and 29th in defense. So really, they're not particularly good at scoring or stopping anyone, and you kind of saw that in the first Pacers game. It was 97-120, and the Pacers were up of 14 plus 6 is 20 plus. They were up 30 going into the fourth quarter. I can't do math very quickly. but they were up 30 going into the fourth quarter. They really ran them off the court, you know. Joe Young was able to play almost 20 minutes. TJ Leaf did play 20 minutes. And, you know, the Suns just had nobody that could stop anybody. I mean, they had eight guys in double figures, and two guys had 9 points. You know, Domas only shot 5 times, and everyone else was scoring. But they were just finding ways because it was so easy to score. It was like the Suns were a sieve. So I don't expect this to be that challenging of a game. The only differences I would be on the lookout for is they made a starting lineup change Monday. They put in Isaiah Kanan for Tyler Ulis. Not much of a change there. Both of them were about 50% scoring and had about 10 points in the first game. Ulis was a minus 15. Kanan was a minus 9. But the bigger one is that they will have TJ Warren back. TJ Warren has been actually a pretty solid player this year, as Adam always oozes about his fantasy production. He's up to 19.9 points per game on 50% shooting from the field. Now, that sounds just meh, but you got to think that he's shooting 50% from the field, and he's only shooting 18% from three. So that's how good he's shooting from inside the arc, and he's a really good free throw shooter. He's getting 5 rebounds a game, so he's really just, Nate Duncan describes it well, a professional scorer. He can get to the rim. He can knock down the mid-ranger. When he has the ball in his hands, he's very dangerous. He's not the best defender, but you know, he could change the game just because he'll be guarded by Bojan, and he's a professional scorer. So just be on the lookout for a guy like that to you know, possibly open up the game a little bit for the Suns a little more than they had in their first game. Booker, 5 for 16. Corey Joseph talked about how important it's going to be to guard a guy like that again at practice today. You know, he's so quick, and he gets his shot off so well, and he can cut. He can do really everything. So, you know, it's going to be important for whoever's on him to, you know, stay with him and make him, you know, go 1 of 6 from three from deep again. That is something the Suns try to do, is get up a ton of threes. They got up 37 the first time these two teams played. And, you know, Ulis, Booker, Bender, Jackson, Kanan, Troy Daniels. I mean, they have a lot of guys who love to bomb them. So outside of Warren, so you know they're going to have to defend the 3-point line pretty well again in this one, because if the Suns get hot, that's how, you know, that's one of the ways the Pacers could, in theory, lose this game. I don't think they will, but it's one of the ways it could happen, is the Suns getting hot from deep, and since they love to chuck them, that's not ridiculous. But yeah, there's just a lot of matchups that it seems like the Pacers will dominate, especially, you know, at the 4, Thaddeus Young with either Dragan Bender and Marquese Chris on him, or, you know, on the inside, Sabonis can move a lot better than any center on the Suns, and they don't have any stretch 5s because they play Bender at the 4, so, you know, not a lot of matchups the Pacers need to really worry about, except for Warren on Bogdanovich. So as long as they're ready with their help defense on that exact rotation, I think everything should be just fine, and they should win pretty convincingly by, you know, I would say 20 points is not unreasonable, just because how poor the Suns team has been. And, you know, in their last 5 games, they've only won 1. They beat the Denver Nuggets. So, you know, they're really not even, you know, they're not playing well recently. They haven't been playing well all season. And I see this as a nice opportunity for the Pacers to win one. And considering that this could be Turner's last game without his injury, if they can pull out one more win without him, that'd be huge. You know, keep Al Jefferson, as many wins as you can. He was plus 10 the first time these two teams played. So, you know, hopefully they can get everybody going and win this game again. But not a lot to really dig into, just because it's such a straightforward task of stop Booker and you win. You know, the Suns do set a lot of flare screens to get guys open on the perimeter. So just being ready to switch, or calling them out before they come, will be key to make those shots contested. They did a good job of that in the first game. And meanwhile, on defense, they want to switch like size, but they don't have a lot of like size guys. So shouldn't be too hard to avoid their switches and get to the rim. So I don't have much else on that game. We hope you enjoy it tonight. It is at 7 at Bankers Life. We'll recap it tomorrow. I believe that will be Adam. Thank you for listening. I'm Tony East. You can follow me at TEastNBA for all your practice news. We will talk more about Oladipo's importance of his all-star stuff when we have a break between games. But tomorrow, Suns recap, Cavs up Friday. Follow the podcast at Locked On Pacers. Please review and rate on iTunes. I would really appreciate it. Have a great Wednesday, and we'll see you guys tomorrow.